Okay, thank you. If everyone could be seated, I think we're ready to go here. Oops, I just have to find the agenda. Okay, so I'll call the meeting to order at like 6:02. Would you like to take the roll?
Okay. Councilmember Aston Nielsen.
Here.
Councilmember Dragoni excused. Councilmember Marumahoko. Councilmember Roll.
Here.
Councilmember Stanley excused. Councilmember Cushman.
Here.
Chair Weidler.
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right. If we can all stand and we do the Pledge of Allegiance, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all. Keep looking down at the agenda like I haven't done this before, but I've been on vacation, so I guess my mind isn't quite back here yet. So at this time, we'll do public announcements. This is an open forum for public comment. So do we have any speakers? Okay.
Officer Jen Pabst.
Hello, good evening to everyone. Nice to see you all. I've just a real quick update here. Our stats for July, we've been very busy. Summer is usually very busy in our department. In the Eden area, we issued 430 traffic citations. We towed and stored 33 vehicles. We arrested 23 DUI drivers. We had 3 felony arrests and 4 misdemeanor arrests. Non-injury crashes were down at 35, and then injury crashes were also down at 17. We recovered 2 stolen vehicles. One had a driver, and then the other vehicle was abandoned. For our vehicle versus bicyclist crashes, we had 1 in the month of July and the bicyclist was at fault. And then for our vehicle versus pedestrian crashes, we had 2, one where the driver was at fault and the other, the pedestrian was at fault. Tomorrow is the first day of school for San Lorenzo Unified School District. So we are going to have extra officers out on patrol, just making sure that everyone's slowing down and paying attention to the school zones as they're going to be active. Traffic complaints that are continuing with our enforcement is Hesperian. We're working on speed. And then, as always, Grant, we're trying to track down as many big rigs as we can who are disobeying the regulatory signs. Upcoming enforcement days, we have Labor Day weekend coming up. I just want to get everyone's minds focused already into September. We will be doing our new holiday enforcement period. So we will have extra officers out on patrol over the long holiday weekend. We created a new crime suppression team. When I'm on the agenda, I'll kind of go into detail more about that. But as for now, it's a group of officers. When our shift allows for coverage, we go out into different areas of unincorporated Alameda County and do kind of a daytime crime suppression. We've done Cherryland. And just last week we did San Lorenzo. So we keep moving around and the dates and times change. Let's see, upcoming education. We have a Start Smart on August 27th at our CHP Hayward office from 6 to 8 p.m. And our next Age Well Drive Smart for senior drivers is on September 16th at 12:30 at the Castro Valley Library. You can sign up with the Castro Valley Library. August CHP is celebrating Back to School Month. So I just want to remind everybody to be vigilant in school zones, pay attention for students as well as people stopping quickly. As always, I'm taking those traffic complaints. So if you have one, either email us at 345recklessdriving@chp.ca.gov or contact our office during normal business hours at 510-489-1500. Thank you. Have a good meeting.
Randy Wage.
Hello, Randy Wage. I just want to say it gets kind of frustrating, but I have turned it in to county enforcement. We get a bunch of garbage at the end of Grant, and it's on the railroad property, so I know they're working on it, but it's a little frustrating. Luckily, somebody who dumped off like five mattresses that got picked up, Mike Barada, picked them up for us, which is really nice on Grant Avenue. So I just hate seeing the place get messed up that way. Secondly, the Unity Park thing was really cool. The opening that was at East 14th and Maddox. I know a lot of people were there. And then thirdly, and there's flyers over there, August 28th at 10 a.m., we're doing a groundbreaking for the Lorenzo Theater for the restoration. Hopefully you guys can all make it there if you're around, and have a good meeting. Thank you so much.
Michael Moore.
I really wanted to thank everybody for responding to the request that we made, or that I made last month. All of the handouts are here. The media was all online 3 days before. I was very, very pleased and impressed. And I wanted to veer from the normal, which is to say thank you to all of you that embrace that. I think that's very important. Thank you.
Bruce King.
Hi, Bruce King with Friends of San Lorenzo Creek. You may remember that in May and June, there was a vote put out to the property owners for a benefit assessment for flood control to raise $275 million for flood control. Had a long list of projects that would prevent flooding. That went down miserably to a defeat. The voters didn't vote for it. So I'm here to essentially say the risk is still there. We have the risk of flooding, okay? That initiative, that benefit assessment would have paid for Don Castro's dam and desedimentation so that the floodwaters, if we had a huge massive downpour, the floodwaters, enough floodwater could be retained in Don Castro, and it would have improved the flood control capacity of the channel. Goes from downtown Hayward all the way through our community here, would by increasing the wall heights and capacity of the channel. You know, we have many areas of San Lorenzo and Cherryland that are in floodplains. And according to the engineering reports that I read, the risk or the probability of higher downpours is increasing. Okay, and we had one a couple of years ago. The floodwaters, I stood there at those top of those flood control channels. They were flowing at maximum capacity. And if we have more rain than that, it's going to go over, and our houses are going to get flooded, and people are going to lose property into the stream, and flood insurance is going to go up. They were hoping to reduce flood risk and reduce the need for flood insurance. So I guess what I'm saying here is we all need, you know, the MAC, the supervisors, the community all need to be saying, why did it fail? Did the community truly understand the risk? Okay. What are we going to do about it? We're just going to say, oh, well, it failed. So, you know, when we have a flood and there were no sirens to go off, I guess the community learned their lesson. So what are we going to do about it? And we need to, ask flood control to analyze this situation, come back and report what the actual risks are to the community, and see if we can move on from here, because the risk hasn't gone away and we're all going to look kind of stupid when the community goes underwater. Thanks.
Keith Barris.
I just want to piggyback on what Bruce said in that I don't think the community really was aware of the seriousness of this issue. I remember that rainstorm that he was talking about. I can remember, and that was, we had a real hard downpour. It was like maybe for a day. I mean, it was maybe for a day. And I can tell you, I saw it for myself, where the creek goes underneath, Meekland over there by that bridge where it makes that turn. That water was this, it only had this much more to go, and it was going to go over. That was one day of a heavy downpour. So I don't know if we have to, make videos or whatever it is we have to do to scare people into realizing how serious this really is. So we do need to do something. I think sending out the little postcards that we got obviously wasn't enough. It just didn't get through. Anyway, I just wanted to put more emphasis on it.
No more speakers.
And this is really addressed to those in favor of it. I voted against it, but I voted against it after I researched it. The biggest issue for me, I'm a homeowner and have been for 30 years, is that the drain to the bay water outlets haven't been maintained by Alameda County Public Works forever. And they back up on normal rain. This would not have addressed any of that. And that was my issue with it. The biggest player that I think is missing is maximizing the drainage that we have now. And ACPWA needs to do that. I've called them several times. I've worked with them one-on-one and have been unsuccessful at getting them to prioritize it. In their opinion, the storm runoff drains are not a priority. It is, however, their direct responsibility. Thank you. Oh, and after I confirmed that that was in fact the case, that's why I voted against it.
No more speakers.
Nobody online either? Okay, thank you.
No one online.
Okay, so public comment is closed. Ashley, can you tell me, am I out of order to give a response? Because I did follow up on one of the questions regarding flood control. All right, can move the chair's report up now and give the chair's report now? Okay, no, it was not a back and forth. It's just a little update. Well, I'll move the chair's report up then till now, because some people might be gone by then. I just wanted to follow up just to let people know that when issues are raised, we do try to follow up. And I did follow up with one of the supervisors and asked if maybe it could be on like the regular ballot where we could find it. And they said they didn't think so, but they know that they have to readdress it. They're aware and they are looking into ways to better inform the public in the future when they come to a point where they feel ready to have another vote. So your voices have been heard. Okay, thank you. So I guess that's my chair's report. And the next item is approval of the minutes. This says June 10th minutes. Was it June 10th or June 12th? But maybe that's one of the issues. Okay, so we'll do June 10th minutes first. Are there any questions, additions, comments? Was it June 10th or June 12th? Do you know?
June 10th, I checked.
What's that?
June 10th. It's a Tuesday. It's a Tuesday.
Yeah, it was? Okay, because in some place else it said June 12th. So wasn't sure which one was wrong. All right, does anyone have any questions, additions to the June 10th minutes? Or is there a motion to accept?
If there's no comments from anyone else, I'll motion to accept.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Megan. Any discussion? Did you have something, Ray? No? Okay, would you like to call the vote then?
Councilmember Aston Nielsen?
In favor, aye.
Councilmember Dragoni excused. Councilmember Marumahoko?
Approved.
Councilmember Roll?
Approved.
Councilmember Stanley excused. Councilmember Cushman?
Approved.
Chair Weidler?
Approved.
Approved.
All right, so that motion passes. And then we have the July 8th minutes. Okay, is there anything on the July 8th minutes?
I do have a comment for that.
Okay, go ahead, Taylor.
So under, on the fourth page, under council announcements, comments, and reports, it's the fourth little comment. This was related to my commentary, and so I'm just asking that maybe it be rephrased or reframed because I think it's a bit confusing. It says that I reiterated the possibility of having, and I would say the agenda instructions to access translation services, in different languages to expand meeting accessibility. So I'll repeat that. Having the agenda instructions to access translation services in different languages to expand meeting accessibility. To clarify, I'm not asking that all of our meetings be in multiple languages. I'm asking that the initial agenda that we put out have a footer that says in multiple languages that can be copied and pasted from agenda to agenda. Translation services, reach out, or los instrucciones de traducir, whatever the case may be, in different languages, so people in that language can read it and know how to get those services. I ask each month, I'm going to keep asking. Hopefully it's pretty low hanging fruit, because, and I will say, Sanol already has this in sign language. So it would be nice if we could have it in our local languages. Thank you for clarifying.
Okay, so do you have a way, do you want to give us feedback, or do you have a clarification then that you can write in? You got that?
Yes, so I got her clarification, and okay, we can approve as amended, and I will amend them.
Okay. Is there anything else from anybody on the July 8th minutes? Okay, this is where, I know there's a date someplace that was out of sync. Then I have on the approval of minutes, this is like on the second page. It says a motion was made by the council member and then seconded on the vote to vote on the June 12th, 2020 minutes at the next meeting. But then that meeting was June 10th, right? So that should say June 10th instead of June 12th.
It would be voted on this meeting. Oh, June 10th.
Right.
I see what you're saying. Yes.
Okay. I knew that somehow one of them said the 10th and one said the 12th. All right. Any other questions or additions to or corrections to the minutes for July 8th? Okay. Is there a motion then to accept them as corrected or as amended?
We'll make the motion to accept as amended.
Okay. Thank you. Second?
Sure. Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay, so it's two corrections, the date and then the correction on the interpretations. All right, then can you call for the vote, please?
Councilmember Aston Nielsen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dragoni excused. Councilmember Marumahoko?
I have to abstain because I had an excused absence.
Councilmember Roll?
Aye.
Councilmember Stanley excused. Councilmember Cushman?
Yes.
Chair Weidler?
Yes.
As amended.
All right, thank you. So our first regular item tonight is that's a planning item 2025-00066 regarding the specific plan amendment regarding some amendments to the San Lorenzo Village specific plan with regards to the fire department. And staff planner Aubrey Rose is here to present. Is that correct? Okay.
Aubrey Rose, Alameda County Planning Department. We're going to load up our PowerPoint. Thanks. This is case number PLN 2025-00066 at 507 Paseo Grande and throughout subarea 5A generally of the San Lorenzo Village Center specific plan area. This is a proposal to amend the specific plan by amending the subarea to maintain the land use regulations there to permit one fire station at parcel 412-31-93-3 and to waive SDR or site development review for fire stations not exceeding specific development standard thresholds. And this is for the purpose of reconstructing the obsolete fire station number 22 here on Paseo Grande at 507. This application was received by the planning department May 7th. Next slide, please. The property owner is the Alameda County Fire Department, and the proponent is our department, the planning department. Location again, 507 Paseo Grande, APN 412-31-93-3. General plan land use designation is Eden Area General Plan, San Lorenzo Village Center Specific Plan Area. Zoning is San Lorenzo Village Center Specific Plan Retail District. The project relies upon a mitigated negative declaration. The environmental review the lead agency was the fire department for the environmental review. There's a link to the MND in the report, I believe. So more specifically, the proposal is three items. One is to maintain currently permitted, conditionally permitted, and not permitted land use regulations in the specific plan. So that's just a status quo. And then two changes. One would be to conditionally permit, I should have said under number two, to conditionally permit one publicly owned and operated fire station on one parcel with county assessor parcel number 412-31-93-3. And third, to waive the site development review for fire stations measuring less than 10,000 square feet in building and accessory building floor area, and that are less than 50 feet in building height, less than 0.25 floor area ratio, and greater than the following setbacks: 10 feet rear yard, 10 feet street side yard, 20 foot front yard, and 10 foot interior side yard. And so you can see an aerial of the property on the left image. It's towards the left along Paseo Larga Vista at the corner of Paseo Grande. There's two parcels there. What's depicted on the right is a recent lot line adjustment that changed the boundaries of the two parcels. Again, we're just looking at the property on the left. And the current fire station is next door at 377 Paseo Grande, also known as 427, for the building itself. And here's a site photo of the property. Oh, yes.
Can you clarify the boundary lines that changed? That wasn't quite clear to me from the photo.
Sure,
sorry.
Sure. We can go back one more slide. So the two properties at the end of the block along Paseo Grande between Paseo Larga Vista and Hesperian were adjusted so that the westerly property, which is 507, is larger than it was previously. And so the easterly property is smaller. So the shared lot line moved to the east towards Hesperian. They are touching. So I'm going to go through the relevant portions of the San Lorenzo Village Center specific plan in order of the how the pages come up in the plan. So this is on the left, the cover of the plan adopted 2004. And in the center, this shows the sub area. So we're speaking of sub area 5A. And this image shows the two parcels prior to the boundary adjustment that we just spoke of. So I suppose that would be part of the cleanup if this is if this amendment is passed. And then on the right side, this is a vicinity map of the specific plan area within San Lorenzo, along Hesperian, south of the 880. And this is chapter 5, land use regulations. So this chapter lists thresholds for different permit types and regulations for construction on a lot and also permitted uses. And I'm gonna go through the changes that are being suggested. So on page 27, the plan calls for a site development review or SDR by planning commission decision for any new construction exceeding 1,000 square feet in area. Part of this proposal would be to waive a site development review for fire stations measuring less than 10,000 square feet in building and accessory building floor area, less than 50 feet in building height, less than 0.25 floor area ratio or FAR, and greater than the following setbacks: 10 foot rear yard, 10 foot street side yard, 20 foot front yard, and 10 foot interior side yard. Next slide, please. And then I'm jumping around as far as the three elements of the proposal so I can keep the pages from the specific plan in order. So we're back to number one, to maintain the currently permitted, conditionally permitted, and not permitted land use regulations as they currently stand. And two, to conditionally permit, sorry, I put two permit, it should be to conditionally permit one publicly owned and operated fire station, a one parcel with county assessor's parcel number 412-31-93-3. And so, that's all right. And so this just indicates where in the plan the insertion would go under conditionally permitted activities. And next slide, please. And then just a cleanup to the appendices that list all of the accessory parcel numbers in the plan, because the two previous APNs changed as a result of the boundary adjustment. So those would be replaced with the new numbers. And these are just some preliminary architectural renditions and floor plans of the new station. They're not official, so that's known as a bridging document. This is just to give you an idea of what is intended or hoped for. And this view would be on the left, facing the vacant lot and facing towards the north along Paseo Grande towards the corner with Paseo Larga Vista. And you can see better that it's on the corner, perhaps on the site plan that's on the and floor plan on the right side of the screen. So in conclusion, staff recommends that the Eden Area Municipal Advisory Council recommend to the Planning Commission approval to the Board of Supervisors of specific plan amendment PLN 2025-00066 to amend the San Lorenzo Village Center specific plan by amending subarea 5A to maintain land use regulations, permit one fire station at parcel 412-31-93-3, and to waive site development review for fire stations not exceeding specific development standard thresholds, as we discussed. And this is for the purpose of reconstructing fire station number 22 at 507 Paseo Grande. So that concludes staff's report. I'm available to answer any questions you may have. We also have Deputy Chief Eric Moore from the Alameda County Fire Department, and Manil from MAC5, the construction management consultant. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me just start with Megan. You have any questions or comments right at this moment?
My question would be, if we were to approve this conditional use permit, would it affect the potential buildings of any properties next door?
It would only to the extent that there would be a fire station there, but not affect the regulations or opportunities that apply to those parcels. And I should have mentioned, I'm sorry, should this be adopted, a fire station would still need to apply for and obtain a conditional use permit from the Board of Zoning Adjustments.
Okay, Taylor.
Since we had the really helpful visual of the site, now I have more questions. I just wanna make sure that I understand correctly, because everyone's very excited about this in the community. The image that you have on the San Lorenzo Fire Station Bridge document, this version of the packet, mm-hmm. is the red space itself. That's the developed area. That's the proposed developed area. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, because there's an outline of the greater area, and that's why I was a little confused. So right. there's still technically a parcel that currently would be unoccupied then. Is that right? That's
correct.
Okay.
Just part of the end of the block.
That's what
there.
I thought. Okay, mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Are we on? Okay. All right. So I want to be clear that this will result in the new fire station, correct? That's what this is going to do?
That's the end goal. This would just update the specific plan so that a fire station is an eligible application. It'd still have to be, if that goes through the specific plan amendment, there'd still have to be an application submitted and approved.
Yeah. But this step would actually make it more workable for the fire station to essentially be constructed eventually, correct?
That's correct. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. In that case, I'm supportive of this. Thank you.
Right.
Generally supportive. Can I just confirm this is one of those fire station designs that was shown to us that would be accessible to the public accessible to the public?
That I don't know, but perhaps Deputy Chief Moore could speak to that.
Good evening. Thank you for having me back tonight. I always welcome this time to have some comments. So yes, as mentioned, I think maybe on our last meeting, we love the public visiting our fire stations. We think it's a great opportunity to have the community engage with us at a personal level. So we absolutely would support having the, you know, public walk by, come in. And I think if you recall our public artwork in the front, we're trying to sort of be able to sort of bring that public and draw them into our fire station. So yes, that's absolutely there. And then I think maybe to answer one of the other commissioners' questions just on the next step. So if I'm wrong, Aubrey, help me correct. Once we get through this, then we will have to come back for a rezoning of the actual parcel, because right now I think it's zoned commercial, but we will have to rezone it to public facility component. And we did this at one of our other fire stations as well. So this will be the first step. We'll then come back to you to ask for a public facilities zoning change on that land. And then we will then be able to go through the conditional use permit to move us forward on that project.
Thank you for answering my question.
Okay, I'm looking at the part of a specific plan. I mean, I get this has to be done to the specific plan has to be changed to accommodate the fire department. So I don't have a problem with that, but I'm confused as that the specific plan right now is being changed anyway to accommodate the housing element changes. So I'm looking at part of it in our packet. It sounds like it's kind of half and half here, because it says in this one paragraph, I don't know if I can tell you, I'm looking at page 3 in our paragraph, but in our little packets that we got, but it references the fact that right now it's zoned for 580 housing units, which sounds like the new accommodation. I don't think that was in the original plan. But then in the paragraph up above that, it also refers to Via Mercado. But Via Mercado has been changed to Via Wilma Chan for like 2-3 years. So I'm just getting confused as to how, if this is all fitting together, if we're looking at this little excerpt is like half the new plan and half the old plan, because there's another group working on this specific plan that this will be included in. Is that what's happening?
It's clear as mud for me right now. Let me see if I can get Aubrey up to maybe help answer that component. So I'm just looking at like that right. corner lot. So let's see if we can maybe loop that in.
Thanks. I'm sorry to say I don't have a timeline for you on the overall update to the specific plan. So this would just carve out the relevant regulations in the meantime.
Okay. So basically, you'll have to take this plan that's somehow in progress and then add this part to make sure that this gets added into that. So when it's complete, it's all complete.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't know the timeline, but I suspect this update could be completed before the adoption of the new plan, and it'd be two separate actions. And then it would carry into the new plan.
Okay. It's just, I just don't want it to get lost because somebody's changing something here, but we're saying change something here, and this, the things are, they're not all one thing yet.
Right.
Okay.
So we can coordinate within the planning department with the policy group.
All right. Thank you. Taylor, did you have something?
I did. Sorry. So initially the area was thought, even though we were talking about commercial, I believe, you know, the intention was that it would be majority homes, and then there would be certain areas dedicated towards commercial. So I'm just curious, because I know this has come up in prior meetings, but maybe the public would be wondering too, because this is adjacent to homes, can you remind us how you plan on addressing any noise associated with it? I think you do it quite well over here, is my impression. What is the preparation for that?
So we definitely don't want to have neighbors that aren't happy with us. So a lot of things will go into sort of building this location. If you recall from the drawing, I don't have it in front of us. We put the apparatus bay. So our living quarters are closer to Paseo Larga Vista. Then we'll have the apparatus bay on the other side. And then the goal is that when we're doing service in the morning, we would bring the apparatus behind our living quarters to help sort of block that noise. We're also looking at some ways to have some landscape to sort of be a visual barrier, as well as possibly a noise barrier sort of for that Paseo, those three or four homes that are adjacent there. And then we also have a few neighbors to the north of our lot as well that we're trying to be mindful of with either doing some sort of wall or something to sort of make it, you know, we don't want to make it a fortress where it's totally isolated, because that doesn't do the community any good. So we're trying to have that sweet spot of that balance so we can integrate the best of the fire station and respect the community that already lives there.
I appreciate you repeating that. Thank you.
Anything else from the board at this time? Warren?
So I want to support my chair's thoughts around a holistic approach. I think I've always preferred a holistic approach when it comes to planning rather than doing things piecemeal. So I do want to ask a couple of questions around this. First of all, Eric, when do you have an estimated timeline as to when we'll actually see the fire station? Not an exact month, but pretty close.
I'm currently targeting somewhere in the middle of 2027, and I could give you a quick update of where we're at if it's helpful. So
yes, please.
Sure. It's been about 6 months since I've come here. So let me just at a very high level, let you know where we're at. So we went out to an RFP to get a DBE, otherwise our known as our contractor, to do the work. We are reviewing the proposals this Friday. We will then in the next 3 weeks be in contract review with whoever our successful construction firm is. So that's one step of this process, is to get our contractor on board. simultaneously, I've been working a couple of other angles. One is, if you are familiar, we have PG&E telephone poles that run right through the middle of that site for us. So we've been working with PG&E to get those telephone poles relocated. So we've actually got information back from PG&E, how we're going to underground the poles that are on our site to supply the electricity to the current village homes that are fed by that. So we are going to the board on September to get the relocation for PG&E approved so we could start on that process of relocating the lines. My biggest wild card that's out there is the environmental impact. So I'm working with our Alameda County Health Environmental Health Division to come up with a corrective action plan so we can make sure that that site is safe, not only for our firefighters, but the community that lives around it as well. So we are diligently working with them. We're going to have to do a little bit more studies on that site before they'll give us a sign off on the corrective action plan. And so that wild card for timing to me is hopefully within the next 6 months to a year to get that finished. But hopefully all these three parallel tracks will line in together. We'll have the DBE on board by the end of this year. They will be the architect of record. We'll finalize our plans. We'll then work with Aubrey and his team to rezone the property, get our plans through the permitting process, work with PG&E to get the telephone poles removed, and then last but not least, make sure that our environmental steps are complete. So that's long-winded. All to say is that I'm hoping by 2027 that we could have that facility up and running.
Thank you, Eric, and I do appreciate that update. I just wanted to also ask Aubrey, did I hear you say that you think that the San Lorenzo specific plan would come after, which would be 2027? Do I understand that right?
Oh, I'm not familiar with the dates. I just know that it hasn't started yet. So this would potentially wrap up before it even starts, and definitely before it completes.
I see. Because it just seems to me that we've got a while, before at least a year, before maybe more, before we tackle this. So I just wonder if we can think about a holistic approach, at least to start. Now, I don't know, I suppose folks would have to deliberate as to how and administratively that all works, but it would be nice if we started that process of the San Lorenzo specific plan sooner rather than later. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? All right, do we have any public speakers on this?
Randy Wage.
I'm just coming up to support the fire department. They look like they're jumping through tons of hoops, so we can just get this first step going for them. Please, let's do that. Thank you.
Michael Moore.
These are really just questions. I looked at the drawing, the preliminary drawings, and it doesn't look to me like you can house a ladder truck in there. Now, right now you pull a ladder truck from another facility, but it's still there.
And can we trouble you to speak into the mic? Not everyone can hear, apologies.
It doesn't look to me like there's provision for a ladder truck. If we're adding capacity beyond 50 feet, and I think we are, it would seem to me that that's kind of important that there be a ladder truck there if the idea is to provide service to the new homes that are built. Now, on the other hand, I guess it's okay. You guys are the pros, not me. The other thing is, I don't think there's a lot of water that goes through that area. And I would think that there would need to be significant change in water supply that you ought to do now, as opposed to later on when you build all the houses. And the last time that I looked at water in an urban environment was, it was usually better to not put in the water after you finished it. Now, the flood guys might see it differently, and we might want to channel with God to bring in a flood so we can have enough water. The other question that I had was, and you sort of answered it in looking at hazardous
waste. But it didn't look to me like in the drawings that there's facility for hazardous waste. Now, I recognize that these are not final drawings at all, but usually there's a setback and all kinds of things that, that have to do with where you're going to store it, where what you're going to do with it, when you're going to haul it, how long it has to be there, all kinds of stuff. In another life, when I was paid for it, I was responsible for these things. And I think that needs to be addressed. And if you're already addressing it, I think that's great. I support you completely. But the fastest way that I know for there to be failure is to recognize in about a year and a half that maybe we should have started this all together all at one time. And I think you're better off right now telling everybody to stop, gather all the parties, put them together and say, for right now, we're planning on opening this thing in 2027. And we have to agree on it, or we need to pull it from the project and have you pay for it later on. That's all I really, I think that's all I had to say. Oh, and I assume that there's traffic studies that are going to be in there, because that area is not prone to making it easy to move large trucks in and out. And it's not a good place to practice. Thank you.
Keith Barrows.
This is incidental, but I probably the bus stop is going to have to be moved as well. I just wanted to speak, and I think Aubrey, you've done a pretty thorough job of showing us. It appears that that this is the only property that's being addressed. And I'm just saying this. I'm just speaking about mentioning and making a point of that because we had a similar thing that was not quite so thorough when it came to the drive-in policy. Hopefully this is going to remain this way and not change between now and when it gets to the Planning Commission, so we don't end up having any more rezoning in any of the other areas or any of our specific plan removed. I don't want us to end up having a toxic waste dump or a slaughterhouse or something like that put in there. But anyway, I had one question. Taylor raised about the noise. So there will be, of course, the sirens on the truck. Will there be a siren sounding from the station itself also, just from the truck? Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
No more speakers.
Okay, nobody online today? All right, thank you. So yes, you have a few answers for us? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Moore, for the comments. And I could remember your name because we have the same last name. So thank you for that. So maybe specifically to address the first question on the ladder truck, as you know, we're a consolidated fire department. So we have multiple resources that respond to a structure fire. So currently within this response area, we run an engine company out of our current station 22, and the response plan has a ladder company coming from 143rd, and we're confident that that resource will get here within the time that we're expected to meet for NFPA. So we built this fire station with the idea that we would be using that ladder truck from there. So hopefully that helps answer your first question. I'm sorry, I'm trying to talk into the mic. The water supply issue. So as everyone's aware, we went through a CEQA process. That CEQA process helped identify a few items that I believe you talked about. One is the water supply. So before we actually can apply to the planning department, we actually have to have East Bay Mud give us how much water flow we would be using and then how much capacity it has coming into our fire station. So we've met that first requirement for the water supply for the fire station. And I know you touched on the housing component. I think you're talking specifically across the street. So I'm assuming that that same requirement for that project would have had it happened or occurred to make sure that they meet that component. The other component you touched on, the hazardous waste. So we don't store hazardous waste at our fire stations. We do have some what would be deemed hazardous waste. We have We're going to put a diesel fueling pump for it to actually fuel our fire trucks. And obviously we're going to go through the proper containment for the above ground tank. And then we have some other miscellaneous, a couple gallons of oil for our fire engine on site, but we definitely, you know, will uphold sort of the hazardous waste side of it, but we don't bring hazardous waste from calls to the fire station to transport to another location. So hopefully that helps answer that question. And then last but not least, the traffic measures that was in the CEQA study, we had to, you know, review and consider that. And then when we actually get to the permitting process and go through public works, they will require us to make sure that we're compliant with the current traffic models as well. And I can tell you that I worked at this fire station here for 8 years at 22, and the traffic is definitely a consideration that we feel is very important. And so one of the best things about this site is it allows us to have a drive-through fire station, so we don't have to back into the fire station. So we're going to come in off Paseo Larga Vista and then point our fire engine onto Paseo Grande. So that will actually help, I'm hoping, sort of ease that concern for the actual traffic component going down Paseo Grande. So hopefully I answered all those questions. Did I miss any?
No, I think that the wording in the documents here said that we were suspending the CEQA and other items to conform to what is present. And that doesn't conform to what I was talking about. That's all.
Okay, perfect. We've gone through our whole CEQA process, and I think the suspension was having to do with the SDR, the site development review component, which will come later, but not part of CEQA.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to just reiterate the microphone's important for the people that are listening online, even though obviously we can all hear right here.
Yeah.
But that's why sometimes they make sure that we're speaking into the microphones. I had
just one more comment that I just want to
add. Yes, to. Go ahead. Sorry.
I actually, when reviewing Aubrey's comment just about the obsolete fire station at 22, I just wanted to take a second and recognize that I don't consider that station obsolete, and I don't think Aubrey intentionally meant to do that. That station has been a critical, pivotal fire station for us. Our partnership with HOA has been outstanding throughout the years. They've been here to support us. We feel that that's, while it's in its age, we still believe that that's a functioning fire station for us. And we really just want to acknowledge the HOA and their commitment to making sure that we provide high quality fire service to the community of San Lorenzo. So just that, and I also wanted to recognize the community members for coming here, actually taking time out of their day to share their comments or concerns, because as a team, I think we're stronger together to bring this community together. So I just wanted to acknowledge everyone that was in this audience and the commissioners for being here to actually listen and take time out of their day to recognize that. So that's what I just want to make sure it was clear.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for coming. I know that San Lorenzo community has always appreciated the services and the relationship with the fire department. And I could reiterate, should you need any extra overflow space, the facility you're in now maybe could be helpful in accommodating if possible.
I think we actually have some ideas that maybe we'll branch out later.
Okay, thank you. All right, anything else from the board? If there's no other questions or any other discussion, I can entertain a motion to approve this staff recommendation.
I will put forward a motion to approve this staff recommendation.
Thank you, Ray. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Taylor. Any other discussion from the board or the council?
Diane, thank you for the call out about unified holistic planning.
Oh, okay. Thanks. All right. You want to call the vote, Zadaya?
Councilmember Aston Nielsen.
Approved.
Councilmember Dragoni excused. Councilmember Mara Mahoko.
Yes.
Councilmember Roll.
Yes.
Councilmember Stanley excused. Councilmember Cushman.
Yes.
Chair Weidler.
Yes. All right, so that motion passes. Thank you. Thank you all. Second, the next item is Alameda County Sheriff's Department fireworks suppression operations update and a review of some fireworks ordinances. This is Captain McMillan.
Present.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. We ready to go? All right.
We're ready. Yes.
Thanks for listening to us. This has been a project that we've been working on for quite a while. I'm Captain Sean McMillan with the Sheriff's Office. I oversee the patrol and investigative side of the house at the Eden Township substation. One of the units that I supervise is the property crimes unit, whose one of their many responsibilities are fireworks suppression. And as you know, living in this area, 4th of July is a big deal, and the month leading up to it is a big deal. So Sergeant Imperial here is going to give a presentation on some of the activities and operations that we did leading up to the 4th of July, as well as some insight and some information about social host ordinances and overall fireworks ordinances that have been adopted by a number of agencies around the Bay Area. We've gotten a lot of pressure from the Fairview MAC folks. We've presented to them the Sinol MAC, Eden MAC today, and then we have the Castro Valley MAC next. So thanks for listening. And without further ado, Sergeant Imperial. And then do you mind if I sit there in case there's any questions? Okay, thank you.
Good evening. Thanks for having me again. I'm Sergeant Curtis Imperial, and I'm in charge of our property crimes unit over at the Eden Township substation in San Leandro. So today I'm going to talk about our review of our fireworks suppression work that we've done over the past year, and again, a proposed ordinance, fireworks ordinance that we're working on. So our mission is to basically mitigate the risk, injury, and death of by the use of illicit fireworks, minimize the risk of structure vegetation fires, be proactive and basically do enforcement with zero tolerance. And then we utilize our explosive ordnance disposal units to safely and properly dispose of illegal fireworks when we're doing these operations. And then we educate the public on current laws, safety procedures, and ordinances. This year, during the 4th of July season, we had 121 fireworks-related calls for service just on 4th of July. That's a decrease from 150 in 2024. We had 5 felony arrests, 3 misdemeanor arrests, and they were cited in the field. We had 9 fires, or we went to about 9 fires that were possibly related to fireworks. And overall, we seized about 1,500 pounds of illegal dangerous fireworks during our operations.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
When you say you get a call for service, does that mean someone's calling saying there's fireworks going off, or like I blew my hand off, or is there a differentiation in what that means?
Yes. It's all everything.
All of it.
Big boom, injuries, fires.
Or just like I hear a very loud noise and it's annoying, or I see a firework.
It's usually a very specific call that there are fireworks being shot off near my neighborhood or at the specific address.
Okay, thanks.
So some of the fires that we responded to and assisted with, like traffic control with Alco Fire, these are some of them in Hayward and Castor Valley. These are the fires that we responded to in the Tri-Valley area, so basically north of 580. The next slide. These are photographs of some of those fires. The first photo top left is a fire over on Miramar that pretty much scorched the whole hillside on Miramar, like just east of Foothill Boulevard. We had a brush fire at the apartment complex or at an apartment complex on Liberty. And we had some brush fires over on the train tracks right over here on Blossom Road. So this is kind of a breakdown of where our firework calls were located. Here in Sector 1, we had 30 calls of fireworks here in San Lorenzo. 18 calls in Ashland. 18 calls as well in Sherryland. 5 calls in Hayward Acres. 19 calls in the upper, like, eastern, what, or I'm sorry, yeah, like eastern part of Castro Valley, western part of Castro Valley, I'm sorry. And this is the and 10 calls in Fairview. And we had 2 calls in 5 canyons. And then in Pleasanton, Livermore, and Sunol, that's what we call our Tri-Valley area. We didn't have any calls for fireworks on 4th of July. So our 4th of July suppression operation, it consisted of detectives from our investigations unit, deputies from our crime reduction unit, patrol deputies that you usually see out here driving the patrol cars, and members of our EOD unit. We worked from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. We drove around in marked patrol vehicles, unmarked detective vehicles, and unmarked patrol trucks from our EOD unit. Again, we responded to calls of fireworks and fires, and we enforced any on-view violations of the use of fireworks. And that night, we recovered a total of 150 pounds of fireworks. And then we also alleviated patrol units to handle these firework calls so they could handle their priority calls of going to their normal patrol calls for service. So the other calls that we responded to, in addition to going to the fireworks calls, is we also helped out patrol on priority calls such as shootings, robberies, residential burglaries, and if there was any like missing children, anything that was going on, we would break away from the firework calls and we'd go help on the very important calls. And then we also assisted neighboring agencies with calls for service if they needed assistance. So last year, I don't think we broke to help any outside agencies, but for instance, so last year we did help Hayward PD because I believe they had a couple homicides. And so all of their patrol units were taken away to deal with that. So we had to go help them. So some additional fireworks suppression investigations that we did. My unit and the crime reduction unit, who's also here behind me, they conducted online investigations of illegal fireworks distribution throughout Alameda County. We took an early approach to this from May to late June to plan undercover buys, which is beneficial in order to reduce the amount of fireworks distributed throughout our county. Detectives use multiple social media platforms to gather intelligence and develop information for identifying sellers and distributors and to seize large quantities of fireworks. Patrol deputies, even before 4th of July, as you know, you guys usually hear fireworks being shot off at least a month before 4th of July. They were detailed to these locations. They would get as much information as they could, and they would forward any of that information up to us for follow-up for whatever we could do with that information. Some of these investigations that we did. This is the result of them. This first slide here, on May 21st, we executed a search warrant in the 300 block of I Street in Livermore after we found somebody selling fireworks on OfferUp. In this instance, we set up a buy with this individual. We met up with him at his residence. He tried to run from us. We caught him. And then we executed the search warrant. And inside, we seized 258 pounds of illegal fireworks, along with some methamphetamine for sale. The next operation, on July 1st, detectives executed a search warrant in the 900 block of Moore Park Street in Oakland after we found out somebody was selling fireworks on Craigslist. And again, we used an undercover profile. We set up a meet point. And when he met up with him, we detained him. We executed a search warrant at his house. And we seized 132 pounds of illegal fireworks, and two firearms were recovered from the residence. On July 2nd, the next day, detectives executed another search warrant, this time in Castor Valley, on Castor Valley Boulevard. This person was also selling fireworks on Facebook Marketplace. When we detained him at his workplace, we executed the search warrant, and this was a little bit bigger catch. We ended up with 385 pounds of illegal fireworks and over $9,000 of cash seized from illegal fireworks transactions. And on July 3rd, detectives executed a search warrant in the 1200 block of Terra Lane in the city of San Leandro. Again, somebody was selling fireworks on Facebook Marketplace. And this was our biggest catch here. We ended up with 650 pounds of legal fireworks. And some of these fireworks were fused together, making them destructive devices. So our commitment, like our captain said, back in 2023, specifically June 14th, 2023, the Sheriff's Office acknowledged valid concerns of the Fairview MAC regarding the use of fireworks. And we stated that a team would research to see what could be done and that more information would follow. So the review of the fireworks ordinance, this is sort of the steps that have to be taken. We've reviewed Alameda County fireworks ordinances with county partners in unincorporated Alameda County that rely on the state fire code and health and safety code. We also collaborate with the Alameda County Fire Department, Hayward Fire, Fairview Fire Protection District, Office of the State Fire Marshal, Alameda County Code Enforcement to identify any additional gaps in any local codes. The Hayward Area Recreation Park District, which has several parks in our jurisdiction, they have their own park regulations prohibiting the use of explosives and dangerous weapons, including fireworks. So we're also taking other jurisdictions in our jurisdiction to kind of incorporate that in any working ordinance that we've got coming. The penalties set forth in the Health and Safety Code or the California Penal Code, which we already enforce, apply to all of the banned fireworks. So a review of fireworks ordinances from other agencies. We've been reviewing Social Host and similar fireworks ordinances in Livermore, Contra Costa County, Hayward, and Sacramento. These agencies got back to me recently. Some of them had some high numbers. Some of them had some low numbers. I can't answer to why some were low and some were high, other than, for instance, the Livermore Police Department, who has a social host and fireworks no fireworks ordinance. They only issued one citation this year. The only explanation I got was that they were responding to other priority calls. The same went for the Contra Costa County Sheriff's Office, only one citation for this year. The city of Hayward, a little bit different. They identified 35 properties which may receive citations for this year. And then the city of Sacramento, which is enforced primarily through their fire department, they used UAVs or drones to identify several locations with multiple firework violations this year. And those potential violations are going to lead up to at least $20,000 each for those properties, because they charge per illegal firework fired off at the property. So they ding them pretty hard out there. So this potential fireworks ordinance would make the use and possession of illegal and dangerous fireworks, including safe and sane fireworks, illegal in unincorporated Alameda County. It would hold social hosts, property owners who allow the use and possession of dangerous fireworks and safe and sane fireworks at their properties financially liable via citations and fines. So to get this off the ground, the Alameda County fireworks, social hosts, or other similar ordinances apply to all unincorporated areas, including Ashland, Cherrilyn, Castor Valley, Fairview, Hayward Acres, San Lorenzo, Sanol, and East County Acres. Per the Board of Supervisors' direction, new ordinances or ordinance amendments affecting the unincorporated areas will go before the MACs for consideration, in addition to going to at least one Board of Supervisors committee, if not multiple, depending on the topic. Ordinance development has to have a lead agency, which is us, the Sheriff's Office, in this matter. And it includes input from any impacted agencies or departments, and all county ordinances must be, quote, approved as to form by the Office of County Council. Ultimately, any ordinance has to be approved by a majority of the Board of Supervisors, typically with two readings over two regularly scheduled board meetings for adoption, and this entire process can take several months to fully approve and implement. So I know that I've said that we said that we'd research a team in 2023, so it has taken definitely a while. I got in this unit a couple months ago, and so, you know, nothing happened before this 4th of July, obviously, so we're hoping something will come to fruition at least by next 4th of July. So what are we doing now? ACSO detectives are actively investigating illegal fireworks sales, possession, and transportation through online undercover profiles. Prior to 4th of July, or whenever information is developed on individuals in possession of illegal fireworks, so it doesn't even have to be during the 4th of July holiday, if we get the information, we'll investigate it. Patrol deputies that respond to these calls for fireworks, again, they forward that information to us. If they identify any individuals at these scenes or any areas of concern, they forward that information to my unit, and then we follow up on it. During the July 4th holiday and New Year's Eve, ACSO makes public announcements via social media, reminding the community that all fireworks are legal in unincorporated Alameda County, and report any fireworks activity in their neighborhoods. The Alameda County Fire Department, Hayward Fire Department, Fairview Fire Protection District, and Alameda Code Enforcement conduct inspections of properties to mitigate fire danger, especially, I'm guessing, around this time. So what you could do in the meantime is you could report any suspicious or any suspected fireworks activity to our dispatch to 510-667-7721. Maintain and create a defensible space around your property, clearing dry brush, grass, trees, and other debris. Have a safety plan, exit route, a disaster kit for your family in case of a natural disaster, request HOA boards to thoroughly inspect properties for potential fire hazards, join your local community emergency response teams to acquire skills to assist your family and neighbors during a disaster, and continue engagement with Alameda County and ACSO on closing gaps in developing sustainable solutions. Some useful phone applications for emergencies. Captain McMillan probably answered a few of these because he lives in fire country, but AC Alert is one of them. Yeah, if you'd like.
Yeah, I'll talk about these. Really, the bottom line is this presentation is about public safety, especially this time of year. We're rapidly approaching, if not already in fire season, right on the heels of 4th of July, which is a major cause for the majority of our fires during summer. I would encourage everyone in this room to download a handful of these apps on their phone. They're free. And if you give me 30 seconds, I'll talk about them. Go ahead. So Watch Duty is a wonderful app. It's only a couple years old. It was designed by a gentleman named Cole Yukin. He actually lives up near me. I live in the North Bay, so I'm no stranger to fire incidents, especially if they're related to fireworks. It basically tells you real-time updates. If a fire is larger than a certain size, we'll get some sort of a update. There's layers, wind direction, things of that nature, how large the fire gets, what the response looks like, if there's air support coming in. Again, it's free. Download it. It's very helpful. I get alerts before dispatch gets the first 911 call, pretty much most of the time, to at least get out to our patrol deputies. So I'm actually dispatching from my office half the time to send units up to support up and see if there's any evacuations needed or if fire needs any assistance with road closures, etc. Sorry about that. Oh, it stays on. Great. Windy is an app. It basically tells you how fast the wind is blowing and what direction. So if you know which direction it's blowing and how fast, you know if it's coming towards you or if you're in a little bit of a safer environment, and you can plan out any kind of escape routes or at least get a sense of if you're out of harm's way. Go ahead. Flight Radar 24. This is, it tracks every airplane in the sky. And if you're familiar with the way the fires move, and you could track where the airplanes are working and where the helicopters are working, typically they'll attack the head of the fire. So you know kind of the direction it's going and approximately where it is if something's happening in your community. Broadcastify is a great app. Most of the time, you can patch in and listen to local law enforcement and local TAC channels that the fire departments are using, especially if it's CAL FIRE. They'll use certain channels on there, and you can listen to how they're attacking and dealing with some of these disasters. That's it.
So if you have any questions, concerns, my phone number is up there, along with my two detectives that work for you. Thank you.
Hey, thank you for your presentation. Do council members have any thoughts here? Let me start with Ray. I'll start at your end.
I'm actually still putting my notes together. Can we go to someone else? Thank you.
Yes, you want to think some more? How about Warren?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay, so I'm going to take the reverse end first and talk about emergency preparedness. I'd like to ask the captain, do you happen to know, Captain, if the apps you were referring to or any apps that you deal with in the emergency preparedness space are accessible to blind people?
I don't know that.
Okay, I think that's something we should be thinking about. And perhaps after this meeting, I can meet you for a moment to get a card from you or something, because I do want to get more involved with the emergency preparedness. There are particular needs that people with disabilities have regarding emergency preparedness. And I'd like to take that offline after the meeting. I do have a couple of questions for the sergeant. And that would be, first of all, can you tell me the difference between what is the main differences between what current ordinances are saying and what anything that is being proposed are saying? I'm a little confused as to what is already on the books as to what is going to being proposed to come on the books.
So currently there is no ordinance here in Alameda County. What our proposed ordinance would state is that because we abide by basically the health and safety code. That's what we enforce right now. The ordinance would give us another tool to cite property owners if they allow partygoers at their house, if they're hosting a party on their property or any property that's adjacent to their property, such as a roadway, like a street in front of them. Because usually when we show up to these calls for service, they're not typically on their driveway. They're lighting these fireworks off in the middle of the street. And by the time we get there, they go scattering back into the house. So once we identify at least the property, we could hold that property owner liable for hosting a party and shooting off these fireworks illegally. And then it would also, again, just make the possession alone of any of these dangerous fireworks, which is already illegal through the health and safety code, which we enforce, illegal through this ordinance, along with the possession and use of safe and sane fireworks.
I'll take a little deeper dive into that. So to enforce the health and safety code, a police officer must on view that to develop probable cause, to watch someone physically lighting something off. In order for us to effectively detain, cite, arrest, whatever, the social host ordinance would allow for crime technicians, firefighters. We could potentially launch a drone and see where these fireworks are coming from and actually hold the homeowner accountable for this, right? So there's many instances like Sergeant Imperial indicated that they're launched from the street, but there's also a number of incidents where they're launching them from a backyard. We go and knock on the door. Do you think anyone's going to answer? No. But if we have, you know, digital evidence like video footage, or we have a firefighter that says, hey, this is launching from here and I'm willing to give you a quick statement, we'll write up a report and then submit it to, code enforcement potentially, and then they can levy some sort of a fine. Because, like, let's face it, we're in the behavior business, right? And if we're dealing with bad behavior that's dangerous to the public, what's going to hurt people the most? Their pocketbook, right? So I believe, like, Hayward Police Department, their first fine is like $1,500. And what they do is they have their own internal code enforcement people driving around documenting where these fireworks are being launched, if they're coming from a backyard or a front driveway or something of that nature. So that's the difference. It's the difference with the social host versus the penal code or health and safety code is you don't need a cop to do cop work. Does that make sense?
It does. And I have one other quick question.
Yeah.
What about the role of the community? What about something like a neighborhood watch or even, you know, a concerned citizen? How does a community role fit into this ordinance?
So we encourage the community members to go out and actually look and call us or document where these fireworks are being launched from. We're not talking about sparklers for the most part, right? We're talking about aerial explosive devices that, you know, they do harm people and they do start fires and they're illegal. So this is just another tool in our toolbox. And I think if I needed a screwdriver and I only had a hammer, you know, we just want more tools in the toolbox.
The way the city of Hayward utilizes their citizens is they will take whatever video evidence that they might have, because sometimes fed up neighbors will go out and they will film fireworks being shot off, or just a simple call. But none of that evidence, again, because we're not there to on view it personally, that evidence is considered like secondary evidence for their administrative reports for these citations that would be handled out. At least what Hayward does is they use that information and that evidence in the citations and the reports that they use to levy the fines down on the property owners.
Yeah. So these reports and citations wouldn't be going through a criminal court. They'd be going through some administrative process.
Thank you.
Okay.
Taylor?
So first, I'm thrilled to see action being taken, because this is a big issue in our area. Our homes are far too close together to have one person's actions, you know, potentially impact our whole community. Not to mention my dogs love something like this. A couple questions around this though. So I noticed on the Pleasanton Livermore Sentinel slide, we didn't have any calls. Then there was also mention of the Livermore Police Department's municipal code. I'm wondering, because that's the slide that popped out to me, have you guys reflected on why that was zero relative to the other areas? Is that you think that's deterring people, or?
It could be, like I said, I can't really answer why they were so low. My response was just from their crime analyst, and she responded with, there is only one citation issued this year, because we had, you know, several other calls for violent crimes going on. And so this year, I think that was an issue. I think the years prior, I think their ordinance has been in existence for the last couple of years, and even before that, they did not have too many citations that were issued. So I don't know if they're focusing on trying to cite people. I think this year they did tell me that they were going to try to utilize drones to identify properties, but again, I think their drones were used elsewhere. So that kind of took their drones. When we were out this 4th of July, we were here between here, Ashland, and Cherryland. We had fireworks going around us all over the place. But by the time we would get to where the fireworks were being shot off at, they would stop. People would scurry back into the house. They wouldn't answer the door. Or they were smart and they shot off all the fireworks that were there, and they stashed away all the other unused fireworks in the house, because they know we can't just go into their house without a search warrant or probable cause to go in there. So for Livermore and Contra Costa County, I think their resources were just stretched thin.
And it was helpful to hear the comparison of other areas that have municipal code to see how they're applying that. I'm curious, have you looked at the before and after though, to actually see what results, you know, were had from this application?
I think the best results were enforcement was being strictly enforced, and they took units to go out and proactively enforce these ordinances, like in Hayward and Sacramento. I don't know what Sacramento's was before, but Hayward, over the last few years, their numbers have generally increased, because it sounds like they go out and they proactively send out these units, and they're going out. And again, they don't even need to contact these residents. All they need to do for these administrative sites, and hopefully our potential ordinance would mirror this, is they just go out and they on view it, and then they film it somehow, either with their body worn cameras or whatever means they have with a drone, and then they levy these fines down on them.
So you're saying the intake has increased, but It sounds like maybe we don't know about calls currently. For Hayward, for example, do you know if the calls themselves also went down?
I think this year they're, I don't think I put on the slide, but the code enforcement contact I had, it sounded like their calls for fireworks probably did go up. Okay. Slightly higher than last year.
And the reason I'm asking, what would be interesting insight, is, you know, this is only as helpful as the effect that it has in the community, right?
Yeah. Right.
So I think the intention is admirable, and that's directionally where, right, I know I personally would like to be. but I'm curious then, and it would be a nice added slide to see, well, in these areas, what was the intake increase after the code was applied?
Right.
What was the call? I mean, and maybe that's directionally where you want it to be. I don't know, but that's the part that in this narrative is missing to me a little bit, is what have you seen in other areas to see that the effect? Anyway, it would just be helpful additional insight, but otherwise I think it's great. Thank you so much.
Megan.
Thanks for being here tonight in this presentation. I guess so. You've talked about the sheriff's office being the lead agency potentially to draft the ordinance.
Yes.
And you talked about obviously what these other jurisdictions have done. So right now, is the plan to mirror Hayward's, or?
It's to pretty much review all these, the agencies that I mentioned. Those are the ones that at least I've looked at. Mm-hmm. And to pick and choose what looks good. And then, to run that through members from our board of supervisors. And then eventually it has to be gone through with county council as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just because I like it doesn't mean that somebody else is going to like it.
Sure.
And then all the wording and all the verbiage all has to be laid out a certain way. So
what is San Leandro's ordinance, or do they have one? Are you aware?
I don't know if San Leandro actually has one. I don't think they have one, but I don't know.
Okay. So it sounds like we're in the infancy of doing our.
Yes, we have a couple of working drafts, but they are definitely not final at all.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what is your? I mean, I heard you say hopefully it goes into effect for the next 4th of July. But what is the
that's hopeful thinking? Yes.
Hopeful thinking.
Yes.
So, what is, I guess, the anticipated timeline for a potential draft to be ready?
You know, it will. Like I said, I've got a couple drafts working right now. Once we are done presenting this to the Castor Valley MAC, I could. And now that the 4th of July is actually over, because the 4th of July took up probably my whole month of June and July. Now I actually have a little time to sit down and actually work on it once we're done presenting this whole idea to the Castor Valley MAC, which I believe is the last MAC meeting that we have to present it to.
I was here at the library for National Night Out, and I saw the office bring an AUV by, or a drone by. So that was cool to see. And if we do incorporate the use of AUVs potentially into our ordinance, is there a likelihood that we'll like have a dedicated one, or do you all share, like what's the number?
We still have to have that discussion with our UAV unit. I had a very informal, discussion with the UAV sergeants, and they weren't too big on the idea. Because they don't want, and I could understand, they don't want these, you know, machines that cost thousands of dollars shot out of the sky. And it's potentially a danger. They have lithium batteries, and if they fall and then they catch on fire and they land on a house or a car or somebody, that's something that we have to definitely talk to my UAV guys about in length, for safety reasons. Just, you know, we could probably do it, from a distance, but I know that their cameras have very good zoom capabilities. But that's something that when it all comes together, they're definitely going to be part of the round table with the stakeholders of getting this ordinance off the ground.
Okay, great. Did you want to add something, Captain?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that the Board of Supervisors approved
a drone first responder program for the Eden Township substation. We're going to have two, potentially three drones responding to calls for service here in the next couple of months. And we're already sort of powwowing how we can elevate those drones in positions to where they're not susceptible to being shot out of the sky, certain areas. And the zoom capability is incredible. And I would encourage you guys, when we get this program up and running, to come by the station and take a look. It's pretty awesome. So just wanted to comment on that.
Okay. I appreciate this update and the work that you all have done and the information presented here tonight. Thank you.
Welcome.
All right.
I echo my fellow council members. Thank you for being here. Thank you also for, as I said, when I first saw you guys, being at the hosting the community night out earlier this week. Everything I'm going to say is in the spirit of ongoing dialogue. So the second thing after the thank you I want to say is, please come back. As you develop these plans and have your consultations across the different MACs and different governing bodies, please come back. Next thing I want to say is maybe a suggestion. Great that you have the PSAs around through social media for 4th of July. One of the things in coming back to this forum as an example is we can provide that channel to you from a PSA standpoint beyond just the 4th of July. Because the other thing I was thinking about is, it's interesting that I guess there's the quote going back to the Fairview MAC and their concerns originating a lot of this. But as I think Councilmember Nielsen mentioned, it's pretty shocking in the urban area, the volume of fireworks that we have. I remember this past 4th of July, driving up into Hayward Hills to actually just look back down over the East Bay. And it's really stark, actually, what's happening in our neighborhoods. So thank you for coming to us with what you're trying to do. And thank you for what you have been doing. New Year's. Have you guys thought about similarly addressing what happens in New Year's? Because I sometimes, from year to year, think it's almost worse.
Yeah, so if an ordinance is approved, then we would definitely use that to our advantage during the New Year's Eve holiday and prior. Because, I live here in the East Bay, and I live across the estuary from Oakland, and I could hear those nonstop, like during Christmas, all the way past New Year's Eve. And working here, it's the same thing, because most of these fireworks are coming from Oakland, unfortunately. And if they're sold in Oakland, most of these from our arrests this year. We found out a lot of these fireworks, if they're not coming from China, a lot of them are just coming straight from Nevada, because in Nevada, it's totally legal. A couple of the guys said that they just drive right up to these warehouses and they load up hundreds of pounds in their trucks and they just drive them across state lines, hoping not to get pulled over. So, and then they make it here and then they make a profit. If an ordinance comes to light, then we're definitely going to use that to our advantage. Not just us, hopefully our patrol deputies that are out on patrol will use this ordinance as well, because they are definitely our first line of defense in going to these firework calls. And so this ordinance would be at their disposal as well.
And then just so I understand, why would you wait until New Year's if you're already able to take some steps around 4th of July?
So we do crime suppression on New Year's. We do DUI campaigns on New Year's. We try to staff and beef up our patrol staffing on New Year's. So we're usually pretty stacked on our major holidays as far as staffing goes. It's not dependent on an ordinance. We're still going to go out and do our job. And if we see something, you know, we're just beholden to the health and safety code or the penal codes that we have at our disposal. But this will give us one more tool to be able to address some of those issues.
Okay, thank you. The stats here are useful, and this was touched on briefly as well. There's one stat that tells us there's a decrease from last year, but in general, do you have any other trends?
No, and I think that there's a decrease because our patrol units helped out a lot this year. They helped our units out by, if they saw any fireworks going off, they would immediately, they were visible with their lights, sirens on, and they were out there enforcing the health and safety code, and they're seizing a lot of fireworks, and they're just going from one call to another, or not even called to a call. They would, and I think the public saw our units and patrol units out there. And unfortunately, I think also neighbors might just be, you know, citizens might be just used to fireworks. And so sometimes they just don't call as much as they used to because they're just so used to.
Yeah. And by the way, a lot of people really love going up on Fairmont Ridge and watching fireworks. Most people don't care. That's the facts. A lot of people really enjoy this. It's very scary to the regular folks that got to get up in the morning and go to work, right? But it's scary for us because we're having explosions go off over our heads all night long or at our cars. And obviously the dog situation, animal situations, if you're a pet owner, it's terrible. And then if you're a firefighter, you're putting in the work, right, to keep the community safe. So it's an unfortunate, inconvenient truth that a lot of people really enjoy celebrating America's birthday with fireworks.
I think on the trends, thank you for what you have. And to the extent you can continue to collect them, please do, because that'll give us, it's the best we have in terms of data that says, are we improving? Is it getting worse? Especially as you move forward with some of the potential future ordinances. The 5 felony arrests that are listed on here, were those the undercover examples?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And I had to pause on that because it was really interesting. And I was thinking back to the PSA suggestion. And I think it's good awareness to share with people that may potentially be thinking about selling illegally in this way. The flip side that I have, and I don't know if you guys can answer it, but I think it's important I ask anyway, is what happens, do you have any failures when it comes to these undercover buys? Do you have wrongful arrests? Do you have difficult situations? Do you encounter challenges in the approach you're taking where A, the public should be aware, B, we could potentially help get the word out?
We haven't had any, in the cases that I showed you guys, we did not have any failures. Before we execute a search warrant, we make sure we have a whole lot of probable cause to go into somebody's house. Deputy Ng behind me, who's going to present next, he did a whole lot of work in one of those cases by doing several search warrants on somebody's phone, and doing lifetime pings and basically following this guy around lifetime and then basically stopping him and identifying all the way down to the rocks on his property to make sure that they matched the rocks in these Facebook posts. So a lot of work goes into these, so we don't have any failures and we don't have any wrongful arrests, because that's the last thing we want to do. There's always risks when serving search warrants, especially when you're in a house with 650 pounds of fireworks that are, you know, fused together that could, you know, it. Some of these things have magnesium, which is very unstable. You know, the city of Hayward had a huge explosion at a house with a guy trying to make illegal fireworks. But yeah, we could definitely put some of this information out where, you know, we could be a little bit more stern and say, you know, and I think we do make it very clear that, you know, you could be arrested and cited, but, you know, we could also be a little bit more stern with the dangers of this, just being near these things.
I think you should. And thank you for what you shared. I never thought I'd go on the record as confessing to being a Dallas Cowboys fan, but our rival New York Giants, there's an NFL player, his name is Jean-Paul Pierre, and he lost three fingers to a firework. They took it. No, they took it. So thank you on the PSA part. Just a few more quick ones. What's an EOD unit?
That's the one. Bomb squad.
Yeah, it's basically a bomb squad. Explosive ordnance disposal unit.
Yes.
Just to underscore that.
So on the heels, serious, correct. Right. So what's happened in the last month? Three major incidences involving explosives, ordnances, fireworks, Esparta, the explosion at the fireworks factory up in the Central Valley. Okay. That happened last month. We had the gentleman that almost blew his head off in Hayward shortly after that. And then we lost three sheriff's deputies in LA County that were transporting. They're all EOD units. So, you know, typically in the past, we would just collect these things, throw them in the trunk of our patrol cars, and then we would meet the bomb squad and dump them off. Now it's like, you know, is there a bad batch of stuff going around right now? But, you know, we got to keep ourselves safe. So we always have our bomb squad. They have a big trailer that's you know, protects the public and us from, you know, if there's any heat or friction that causes these things to ignite and go off, right? So that's always in the back of our minds. These guys are out there collecting. I was out there that night collecting large quantities of fireworks. And again, these aren't little firecrackers, right? They're large aerial mortars, large, you know, M1000s and M80s. They're basically like half sticks of dynamite. So yeah, I would love to put out the meme of all the, you know, blown off hands, but I don't know if the public's ready to see stuff like that. So, you know, we try to be a little bit more cognizant of that, especially because we know, you know, kids are watching this stuff. So yeah, we're open to any suggestions for our PSAs, and I can certainly, or Kurt can certainly, you know, push that through our public information officer.
Thank you. Yeah, come back. We'll talk it through.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is the first time I've heard of the acronym CERTS, Community Emergency Response Teams. Mm-hmm. The concept sounds tremendous.
Yeah.
Do we have any in the unincorporated area?
Yes, you do.
Yep.
Okay.
We run it on the fire side, so
that would be amazing. That'd be amazing. Okay, so just for those that couldn't hear on the microphone, it does exist. The fire department is aware, and we could potentially look into just sharing more information. Awesome. And then the last thing I had, and Officer, you touched on this briefly. People do like celebrating the nation's birthday. To my knowledge, the closest area that they celebrated with fireworks this past year was the Alameda County Fair on July 3rd. I don't know if anyone else has any information on anywhere closer where there were sanctioned celebrations. I think less so for the sheriff's office, although you guys do support events. I think there does have to be an avenue and an opportunity for that to be done in a way that isn't harmful and in a way that celebrates the intent of the holidays. So I think all of us can take a role in being responsible. And then I think for those of us in official positions, it's something we should consider for the unincorporated area.
I totally agree. I think that one of the issues that occurred this year, I think a lot of cities had to cancel because the fireworks factory exploded and 8 people died. So the supply chain got a little hampered. And then there's a lot of areas like in the North Bay where we just don't do them anymore because of all of the major fires. I think the public in a lot of our rural areas are just like, no, we'll do without them because we've seen too much fire danger. So I do agree. I think there should be safe avenues like the fair. People used to go to all kind of, you know, Great America, you know, out on the bay, wherever. But that's not something that we organize, but I would certainly support it.
Okay, thank you. I've learned a lot. I just assumed we had an ordinance and wondered why you couldn't catch all those people out there who scattered after they set them off. I have only one thing. I would recommend that you try to speed up the process because I hadn't thought about New Year's. It would be good to have something in place by New Year's if possible, instead of waiting until the next July 4th.
We'll be working on it. Trust me.
Okay. I appreciate all the information that you brought to us, and let's see if there's any public comments.
Michael Moore.
There's more than the 4th of July to worry about. There's TET, which is 35% of the population of Alameda County. There are celebrations that happen in September. 35% of Alameda County is Southeast Asian. That's TET and the other celebrations that go with religions that are not based on traditional American. We need to expand consciousness in this to embrace everyone. Otherwise, we're going to have incidents like the incident in Esparto, which has resulted in some changes in the sheriff's department up there, I think. Big time changes, since they were the guys that owned it. And the police department or sheriff's department in San Francisco that approved it. There's a lot of bad things that are going on with this. This isn't simple at all. And the truth is that I think that we've seen the end of fireworks. I'm not even sure drones make a lot of sense based on what happens if you have 400 of them all fall down at one time. Anyway, thank you.
Bobby, you're on the line. You'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your presentation. Very informative. And my name is Bobby Clark. I'm a resident of Fairview. We in Fairview have been working towards pushing for to strengthen the toolboxes for enforcement. And we're glad to see that it's still continuing. The ball is continuing to roll. My question for council and for staff, as Alameda County is pushing this as informational items through what they call a roadshow to the different MACs, at what point is this going to be an action item where you as council members can actually vote and say, yes, we want this ordinance? And does this mean that before this can go to the Board of Supervisors, it's got to be completely legally vetted and then come back to each of the MACs as an action item to get your official vote on it? I mean, that's the purpose of the MAC, isn't it? To be an advisory council to the Board of Supervisors. But let's face it, you sitting there listening to an informational item is not advisory to anything. It's just information. So my question, and I hope you guys as council members will push staff to ask them, what is your plan how do you perceive this going forward? Because I think we all know that the sheriff's department wants better tools or enforcement, and that'll make their job easier. So if you would please push forward that question. Most public comments don't get answers to questions, but if you would push it as council members, maybe we'll hear some kind of answer tonight. And I appreciate your opportunity to speak. Thank you.
No more speakers.
Okay, so public comment is closed, and I think we've sort of addressed the time frame, but maybe you can specify it a little bit clearer. I'm pushing for New Year's of this year, but
that would be nice. Yeah, sure. That would be great. So again, once we're done presenting this to the Castor Valley Mac, I'll definitely sit down and try to fine tune a lot of parts to this potential ordinance. And to answer, if he's still online, Bob Clark's question, what's the Board of Supervisors going to do? When is it going to be in action? It's going to be in action when there's an ordinance in front of them for them to review. So then that's when it will become in action for the Board of Supervisors. And hopefully we could do that sooner than later.
His question was, is it going to be coming back by the MACs once it's drafted? That was his question.
Yes, we could come back and present this information to the MACs. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that would be the usual. It would probably come back to the MACs. But what I heard you say pretty specifically is your goal is that would be in place before next July.
Yes. I mean, okay. Realistically, yes. I mean, that'd be great if we could do it even sooner.
Okay. And we're hoping maybe by New Year's, just to be specific for the caller. But by next July is kind of your goal, right? Is that what you were saying?
Well, it's not our call. That's we right. have a we have right. steps and
gotcha. You know, yes.
So that's what we're doing. Right. So we don't have a crystal ball as to when all of these things are gonna happen, but we're gonna hit the Castor Valley Mac. We're gonna consult with our county council, our chief of staff. He's going to have a draft prepared, and then we'll move from there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Is anything else from the council?
Oh, excuse me, Chair. We have one more that raised their hand. Would you allow to talk? Or I know you closed probably comment, but.
Is it somebody
online?
Here?
Online.
Online. Yeah, give them. Well, all right. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Okay.
I'll reopen public comment.
Brenda Clark, you're on the line. You'll have 3 minutes to speak.
Thank you so much. For what it's worth, my hand was raised before you closed public comments, but at the very last minute. So I just wanted to say that here's the facts. The state fire marshal sets the rules and regulations for fireworks. In their rules and regulations forever has been that fireworks, all fireworks, are illegal in unincorporated Alameda County. In incorporated Alameda County, there are 3 cities that can sell and discharge safe and sane fireworks, and that's Newark, Union City, and Dublin. But the fireworks have to be done in those jurisdictions. So that's why our signs have always said all fireworks are illegal. The state fire marshal says there's no distinction between safe and sane and what we call illegal fireworks. All fireworks are illegal in unincorporated Alameda County. The one thing we've been missing that other jurisdictions has done is the deterrent that our little pocket of the universe here, surrounded by areas that have an enforcement code, whether it's social host or accepting complaints as or whether the officer sees it or not, in order to hold people responsible, not just during the episode, but after the fact, to open a case with the Sheriff's Department's Code Enforcement Division, see if we, if they have a case, issue citations, that sort of thing. I know when Hayward got their ordinance approved, people would drive to Fairview because or Castro Valley to discharge some of their fireworks, because they know, the public knows, it's in every publication that the fire district and Hayward Fire puts out, Alameda County Fire. We get newsletters, notices all the time. All fireworks are illegal, signs all over the place. So I think people know where there's an ordinance and where there's not. And for me, I think it constitutes and creates a deterrent for our district, for unincorporated Alameda County, as was intended by the state fire marshal, and we're surrounded with it. So I see no reason not to move it forward as soon as possible. It's very important. We're, many of us have had our fire danger status updated by the state fire marshal to dangerous areas. Thank you.
Okay. So public comment is now closed once again. And thank you again very much for your presentation and for the information. And we'll let you go start writing an ordinance.
Great. Thank you. Thank Have you. A good night.
All right. Last thing on our agenda is a presentation and discussion of a draft ordinance establishing the unincorporated Alameda County Pedestrian, Bicycle, and Trails Advisory Commission. And Valerie's here to give us the information on this. This is an informational item also.
Yes, thank you. Is. Yes. Hello, everyone, and good evening. My name is Valerie Arkin. I'm a supervisor's assistant with Supervisor Miley's office. I'm here tonight to present a proposed draft ordinance for a pedestrian, bicycle, and trails advisory commission for the unincorporated areas of Alameda County. I am seeking feedback on this proposed commission and will incorporate that into the final draft that will eventually go to the Board of Supervisors for approval. This agenda item includes the staff report and the draft ordinance, so hopefully you've all had a chance to review that ahead of time, but I'm going to give you some information tonight as well. So to give some background information, the current unincorporated area bicycle and pedestrian advisory committee was formed back in 2020 to provide engagement and feedback from constituents on bicycle and pedestrian issues of safety, access, and promotion of alternate modes of transportation. Their duties have included providing input and feedback for grant applications, projects related to streets, bike lanes, sidewalks, safety improvements, and more. Plus one of the main duties was giving input on the bicycle and pedestrian master plan. Supervisor Miley proposes establishing a formal commission, which will advise the Board of Supervisors directly. And this commission will take place of the current committee, just to be clear on that. So this will allow for more community member empowerment. There will be more opportunity for the commission to set the agenda, of course, within the scope and authority of the commission. This will result in looking at all issues related to pedestrian, bicycle, and trails, and not just select issues. So there will be definitive appointments by the Board of Supervisors with term limits for the members. The commission will not be as isolated, and there will be engagement by other agencies, such as CHP and Alameda County Sheriffs. An update to the Bike and Pedestrian Master Plan will be coming soon, and this commission will have an active role with input on that update. So as previously noted, the addition of trails was also added to this commission, as that's another important subject for this commission to consider. Multimodal transportation is a priority. So for all the reasons mentioned, this is why we are coming forward with this proposal. So just an added note, MACs will still have their authority. So the commission will be similar to how other advisory bodies work with the MACs, like how the Parks, Recreation, and Historical Commission works with the MACs. So it will, any subject would go to the commission first, then the recommendations would go to the MACs. So regarding the actual duties of this commission, members would serve as the representation of the unincorporated areas of Alameda County, which includes Castro Valley, Ashland, Cherry Lynn, Fairview, San Lorenzo, Hayward Acres, Sunol, unincorporated Pleasanton, and unincorporated Livermore. And as I again mentioned earlier, members would provide the feedback related to all pedestrian, bicycle, and trail matters. Other things are like projects and improvements, development plans, and implementation of efforts. And again, with that primary goal of providing input on the bicycle and pedestrian master plan. And again, members may work with law enforcement agencies, other county departments, and other public jurisdictions as assigned. And one example of that could be a school district, for instance. So regarding the structure of the commission, it will consist of a 7-member body, 4 members from District 4, 2 members from District 3, and 1 member from District 1. This is appropriate with the population in each district as depicted in the table that is included in the staff report. And just to note, those 3 districts are the districts that have unincorporated areas in their particular district. So as far as the members go of the commission, each member must either reside in the unincorporated area of their respective district or work at or own or operate a business in that unincorporated area for a minimum of 5 years. Or one other qualification could be working at a public agency that serves that unincorporated area, such as like AC Transit or BART. Regarding budget and some other specifics, the meetings will be quarterly and held at the Community Development Agency's public hearing room on the third Thursday of the month. There will be a maximum of 12 meetings annually with an additional maximum of 2 special meetings annually for a total maximum of 14 meetings annually. And we're putting that in there because that's like the top maximum. But again, we are starting with quarterly on this commission. Like other commissions, members will be paid a stipend of $50 per meeting, not to exceed 2 paid meetings per month. And in addition to any reasonable and necessary commission expenses that they could get reimbursed for. So staff support with this commission will be provided by Alameda County Public Works Department with the Board of Supervisor District 4 office assisting with agenda materials and admin support as needed. So more descriptive budget information is included in the staff report. Additionally, attachments were included related to the maps of the districts that encompass the unincorporated areas of the county, as well as the actual draft ordinance itself. So you should all have that in your packet. So as stated earlier, I'm here to listen to public comment and of course take any questions and listen to your discussion and hopefully get input from each of you that I will take notes on. And that input will be considered in the final draft that will be presented to the Board of Supervisors. So thank you for your time and engagement on this issue. And that's my presentation this evening.
Thank you for your presentation. Let's see if we have any questions. I'll start with Taylor.
Sure. I guess my question is around the structure of representation. So, or maybe it's more of a comment followed by a question, I suppose. I understand the methodology. It's very clear. And I don't necessarily dispute the outcome of representation, but I guess the first question I had around that was just, well, is that really representative of the users of the transportation? I know you're including parks now, so maybe that's where it's expanded. But I look at some of these areas and I suspect that some are going to be higher users of the transportation than others. So they'd have more commentary around it. And that's just, I guess, my comment, question, all of the above, of maybe some more thought needs to be applied to the methodology of representation, because you want people who are actively using it to be commenting on it, not ones that may not be.
I think that would be when the Board of Supervisor votes on the membership of the commission. I think that is a key point that will be in consideration, as are they active bicycle users or trail users, or what has been their involvement. So we don't have that spelled out exactly in the ordinance and I don't think we could in the ordinance, I believe, but that would be a major consideration for being picked to be on the commission. Am I answering your question
correctly? Yeah, partially. I mean, and you know, maybe that's the intended outcome, because you're going to have a variety of perspectives because of that, which you want, right? Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm thinking that some communities, you might have 80% of the populace, I'm throwing out random figures, obviously, but 80% of the populace that are using public transportation, maybe they're taking the bus. So you're going to have a very weighted perspective there, versus maybe you've got 10% of another community that hike and no one uses public transportation. So, I guess I'm just sensitive to that 80% of the people who are all on public transportation. They're the ones who are going to be using it. Is that a fair proportion of contribution then as a result of that? Because right now the way we've weighted it is based on distribution of where people live. If we're looking for feedback on transportation, I'm just questioning, and maybe I'm overthinking things, but is this an accurate measure of the users in that space to get the diversity, but also to get the weighted feedback of where we're really impacting?
Okay. I can understand what you're asking. Well, because it's a commission that's representing an unincorporated area, similar to how other commissions work in county, cities, whatever, you do have to live in that jurisdiction. So, or as I stated earlier, if you work at an employer in that area, you know, because perhaps you bike to work every day and you actually work in that area, that unincorporated area, that would qualify you as potentially becoming a member of that commission.
So this methodology is pretty standard for all commissions then, you're saying?
I think, yes, I believe it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I still question it, but I understand and I appreciate that.
I'm taking notes on that too. Yeah.
I'm going to, usually I just wait for everybody else, but Taylor kind of hit upon, I think, exactly what I was looking at. When the table, the way it's divided by district 3, district 4, district 1, and district 3 would have four members, right?
District 4 would have.
Right, district 4 would have four members, and then district 3 would only have two, and then district 1, one. So district 4 would have four members. And of District 4, Cache Valley is like 66,000 people. And then Ashland, Cherryland, Hayward Acres, and San Lorenzo are, well, almost equal if you add them all together, just to Cache Valley. But my point is, Cache Valley is way different than what they call us, the flatlands in the Eden area. And theoretically, Cache Valley could have four representatives and make all the decisions for the whole unincorporated area that's included here, because I mean, that could happen, right? I'm saying this allows for four representatives from Castro Valley, and there'd only be three left from all the rest of the area, which it seems to me that would definitely weight it in the Highlands area, or whatever you want to call Castro Valley, or the Flatlands. So that was the thing that just stuck out at me, is that it doesn't seem to, it seems to be set up so that all areas might not really have an equal distribution doing it by district, because district doesn't seem to equalize the demographics of the populations, if that all makes sense. But that would be my biggest input, and I will be quiet and let the rest of the members go ahead and see what questions or comments they might have. Sorry, Warren.
Got it on?
Oh, yeah, got it.
It's on, okay. So I agree with both Taylor and Diane in that we really need to be thinking about the kind of balance that we're looking at here, because you have different balances with different lenses. So yes, there is a geographic balance, and that can be looked at in more than one way. You also have an equity balance, which I think is important to think about. And there's an equity can be looked at in a number of ways. As Taylor mentioned, it's the users of the system. And you know, as a blind individual, I'm going to be using the public system because they're not going to want me to drive. So bad idea. So, you know, I do think that those different balances make sense to me. And, you know, there's a lot to weigh. There's these bike pedestrian spaces tend to have bicycle coalitions and pedestrian coalitions and so forth. So there's a lot to weigh in. With a commission size of only 7, you really have to do a lot of tap dancing around to try to make the right balance. And I'm curious how that will happen. And I personally am interested, as a person with a disability, I am very interested in this process as a user of the system. That said, I think that's where I'm going to leave it, is that the supervisor's office really needs to think about, you know, all the different lenses that we're going to be using to make this work. Thank you.
Oh, Megan?
I don't have any additional comments at this time. I would support, you know, a committee becoming a commission and having more direct impact. I would support a committee being turned into a commission and having more of a direct line of contact with the supervisors. I'm excited to see trails added. I know that my husband and I love to go up in the trails and run around in the beautiful, you know, hills. And it's, you know, it is unique in a sense that I live in an area where I don't have necessarily like the trails that I utilize per se, but I still have, I would like to have input, or someone like me who is from the flatlands would like to have input on a lot of the trails that are in the hills. So I appreciate the comments that Taylor, Diane, and Warren made about, you know, various lenses for the folks that are on the commission, but I'm not sure there's a perfect answer per se. I completely understand why using a population proportionate to the proportion of a population size to determine, you know, the advisory seat members. I don't know, you know, I keep in mind equity and, you know, that sort of thing and legality when you have to make these sorts of decisions and not using or choosing anyone in a discriminatory fashion. So I understand that that's always a consideration that you need to make. But yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Ray?
It says that there's the added responsibility of trails. And in the first paragraph, it says that the existing committee's duties include trails. Can you maybe just clarify what I'm missing?
It was just not specified in the type of commission that, I'm sorry, the type of committee they are. So there wasn't really that, I guess, maybe priority of trails. There have been some issues that have come before them. I don't think very much on trails, but because, like I've mentioned, multimodal transportation is a priority in the county, we kind of want to encompass all areas. So actually, putting that in the title of the commission will make it be deemed more of a priority. I guess that's what I would say on that.
Got it. Yeah. And then the overall objective of converting from a committee to a commission, is it kind of what Council Member Megan said? It's to get more impact and exposure?
Yes. Yes. It'll be a little bit more of a formal process. It'll be... they will have more input into agenda items, for instance. At the current committee gets, you know, doesn't get quite as many things coming to them that could be coming to them in regards to bike pedestrian trails. This would make it more of a priority and empower the community members more to actually have some impact.
Got it.
In this area.
And then just two specific examples I can think of in the Eden area right now. There's the rail line along Western that's being talked about becoming a trail from Oakland to Fremont. Would that fall under the jurisdiction of this commission?
To me, that sounds like that would be something that could come to them for input on.
Okay. And then the project along San Lorenzo Creek, that's going to go from the water up to at least through downtown Hayward, maybe almost to the edge of Castro Valley. Would that be another one that falls under their purview?
I believe so. If it's in the unincorporated area and it has anything to do with bike trails, hiking trails, pedestrian, anything to do with safety and access, rail improvements usually are under the purview of this body. So yeah, I would believe it would be.
Okay. And then hopefully my last question, what, from a practical standpoint, what would change? So the title gets changed. They're no longer a committee. They're a commission. They're advising the Board of Supervisors directly. And as a result, in 3 months from now, what's different?
More community engagement, I guess, on the issues of bike, pedestrian, trails issues. So more community engagement, more community empowerment as to what comes to the commission, what they get to give input on. And again, more of a formal, I guess, more of a formal, formal type of process. So, you know, the bike and pedestrian master plan, that is going to be an update. It's going to be coming soon. That's what we're all hearing in the county. So that's a pretty important piece that they need to give input and feedback on and maybe become more involved in that than what has been. So those are some of the areas I think that I hope I'm getting to your question of, you know, they might also have more engagement with other agencies. I mentioned CHP, I mentioned sheriffs, could be school districts as well. It could be other agencies within the county. That typically hasn't happened up until now. So that would also be a way to kind of have that, you know, kind of collaboration.
Okay. It starts to answer my question. And I think the more concrete examples you can give, so you listed agencies, I guess that means more meetings with them. I didn't know we have a bicycle pedestrian master plan. Is that for unincorporated, by the way?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay. So yeah, like if I don't know about it, I don't think the majority of our residents know about it. And so that would be a good thing to,
yeah,
I don't know, a press release, come to the MAC, come talk about it here as an example. So just more examples you can give of, because this is now a commission, the following is going to change over the next few weeks, months, et cetera.
Okay. I think the current committee, I don't think had met that often. I believe they met last December, and then I think they met a couple months ago as well, but there was probably about a 6 month gap before they met. So this would be quarterly, at least a start. So could be more meetings than that. So more things for them to get involved in and engaged in and give input on.
So that's one good example, before versus after. I'm just encouraging you. You've got about five or six of those. Please just be explicit so that people know what the improvement is and what they can expect.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
And I wanted to comment on, mentioned the some of the comments earlier, the geographic versus the equity, users of the system, that type of thing. I do know it will be the desire of the Board of Supervisors to make this as equitable as possible. And those that are users of the system, I think, would get priority as getting picked to be a commission member. So, you know, it also depends on who actually applies. That can always be challenging with commissions. Hopefully it's not all Castro Valley residents or people who work in Castro Valley that are applying, and that there is a makeup that is a little more, you know, a little more representative of the whole unincorporated area in and of itself. So hopefully, yes. And I can have Ashley chime in here?
Sorry, just to add to Valerie, Ashley Strasberg from Supervisor Miley's office. Probably the biggest change that you'll see right now, the council reports to Public Works. This change, they'll be advising the Board of Supervisors directly.
Thank you, Ashley, for that example. Okay. And thank you for the call out on, what was the last point you made? It was an important one.
About the desire.
Oh, the makeup. Yeah, the makeup. Mm-hmm. If it is only people from Castro Valley, please like pause and come back to us so that we can try and get more representation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That would be best. And I'm sure that's, again, I'm sure that's what the desire would be, to have a very, you know, representing all areas. So I will make a note of that, though, to really strive for that. So, okay. Well, thank you again. And I will continue to take notes this evening.
Okay. But I don't think we're quite finished yet. I don't have a problem with having a commission, but couple of things that I didn't see on here. Would the term be for like 4 years, like most of the boards? Or?
Yes, it's in the ordinance. It is, and they will be staggered at first, because anytime you start one, you don't want everybody having 4 years at first, so then everybody goes off at the same time. So there, it is. It's stated in the actual draft ordinance there of how that will work. But yes,
okay, I might have missed some of it, and they would be appointed by the supervisor of each of these districts, right?
Yes.
That would be the theory. That's how it would be determined. I guess that's what just really bothers me about Castro Valley. Could four people from Castro Valley would just have control of the whole commission. I mean, if they were appointed that way legally, according to the way it's drawn up, that could happen. And anyway, it just seems that the Eden area would not have an equal representation, let's put it that way, from the way it's written. Anything else from the board at this moment? All right, anything from the public speakers? I will open this to public comment. Michael?
Michael Moore.
I would like to urge the board to send a very clear message back to Supervisor Miley that there needs to be more work on this before it's submitted. It has a lot of flaws in it. I don't need to point all of them out to you, but Diane, I think you've left off Livermore, who could easily appoint four people. Pleasanton. Well, you said that there were three districts, right? Four, three, and one. Where's Livermore? No, they're part of four, aren't they? Okay, so there are, from the fourth district, from District 4, how many people are there? Four. From District 3, how many are there? Two. And from District 1, okay, plus Pleasanton, plus Livermore? Because that's not what you said when you read it. What you said was that it is expanding to include Livermore and Pleasanton.
Yeah.
My point is that there are, I'm not looking at what the actual thing is. I'm not sure all of you are either. And all of the other addressed agencies that you correctly asked about. I think there's enough discussion points within the MAC itself to say, we think this is a great idea. We like alternative transportation. We don't want to have cars. We like the idea, but we don't like the fact that this is really just window dressing and one extra thing to pay money to people to sit on and not do anything, because that's what this really sounds like to me. So I would just urge you to say, we like it, but we would not support it the way it is right now. Get your act together. Thank you.
Bruce Castrovalli, you're on the line. You have 3 minutes.
Hello, my name is Bruce Doogie. I'm actually a present member of the BPAC, the one that exists today. And I am so excited to see this finally come to fruition. Supervisor Miley has talked about this for a number of years. We need more leverage because Public Works is not always cooperative, especially setting the agendas and the discussion topics. This will also allow us, this new commission, to talk to people other than the Public Works, as was noted. And I just want to make a comment about the BEEP, the bicycle master plan, bicycle pedestrian master plan. This is identified as the number one climate action in the climate action plan to reduce greenhouse gases in the unincorporated area. So 73% of all of our greenhouse gases come from driving. And so it's extremely high. And the only way that we're going to get that down is to get people to stop driving, so and reduce their driving. So the BPAC, that's part of why they're trying to elevate it in importance, because of that climate action plan. And we do are working on this new, eventually this new bicycle master plan. So I totally support it. I think it's a fantastic idea. It's about time. I actually am not too excited about, the only thing I would adjust is having public agency employees work there. I also want to address this idea of this representation. Supervisor Miley's District 4 covers a lot of Eden. So it's not like, he gets to say he can, within his district, pick the people. So they're not all Castro Valley. District 4 is not all Castro Valley. I just want to point that out. And so I think if you look at the population distribution, I think you'd actually have to allot more than 4. Just look at the numbers. For District 4. So I think he's, trying to be a little bit fair there. I just love it. I think it's fantastic. Can't wait for this to finally occur. So thank you.
Bruce King.
Hi, Bruce King. I actually live in Castro Valley, but because I do watershed things, I tend to go wherever the water goes, including, wherever the trails might go. So I'm highly supportive of this move. I've seen, I haven't been on the current BPAC, but I've seen where Public Works sets the agenda, and sometimes the BPAC members want things on the agenda that aren't on the agenda. And sometimes the BPAC renders decisions that don't get followed by Public Works because Public Works has a different idea. So I think this elevates it to the right level. As Bruce Doogie was saying, I was going to bring up the same thing, for climate reasons. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of reasons to get people out biking and walking, but we really have to reduce car usage. And we can't get everybody out of cars because we're car culture. But if we get 5% of the people out of cars, that's a huge accomplishment. With e-bikes, man, people can zip anywhere and everywhere if we've got good trails and bike ped features on the streets. What else was I going to say? I do question the in the ordinance it says if you work in the area, Or if you're involved in an agency that supports the area, is that the way other committees and commissions are also worded? Okay, so that's a pretty standard feature. Okay, so I highly support this. I think it would be a good elevation in terms of responsibility and ability for this commission to get things done. Thank you.
Kelly, you're on the line. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. A couple of
make me worry about this commission. See, it sounds like in theory, you could have seven members of the Public Works Agency appointed to this because they're the ones that know the most and they work for Alameda County. They know all the bikes and pedestrian and trail issues. And it sounds like they don't have no residency requirement at this special commission. So they could live in Contra Costa County, as many some of their employees do, I'm sure. And I've heard of government employees that live in Arizona or Arkansas or Tennessee. You know, this is all well within the there are government employees. There's no residency requirement for government employees. So why are we appointing government employees? You know, in the sake of for the sake of clarity and equity, I would suggest having the exact same residency requirement as the Planning Commission has and many other commissions do, which is must be a resident of Alameda County. That's simple. And that's a pretty standard. It's good enough for the Planning Commission. Why not have it here? Then also the Planning Commission, because they understand that they have to represent the entire county and because of the importance of their work and because they were established in 1929, and they were set up in a very very carefully to have broad representation. They don't just represent the unincorporated area; they represent the whole county. So they have people being appointed from every single supervisory district, or the people who are making the appointments, which is the five supervisors. All five have at least one appointment. In this case, this commission is trying to cut out the supervisor for, I think it's District 5, and also the supervisor for District 2. And that's not a good idea. So what they call appropriate is not the same word as proportionate. You know, appropriate has a kind of a broad kind of a philosophical meaning, and proportionate has a mathematical meaning. So what would it mean if we had proportionate representation? Well, in that case, District 1 would have 0.2 seats here. Why are you giving District 1 one seat when they only have 0.2 seats worth of population, about 4,400 people? It's very strange how what you consider appropriate, it's nowhere near being proportionate, is it? And how did District 4 lose a seat? They should be getting 5.4 seats in if they were being proportionate, and District 3 would be getting 1.4 seats. So for all those reasons, I call for proportionality.
No more speakers.
Okay, thank you. So public comment is now closed. Let me, Judge.
Yeah, I was going to go ahead and address some of the things that came up.
Questions? Okay, thank you.
Yes. So in terms of the makeup from District 4, District 3, and District 1 that was asked, so District 4 is going to get four members because they're unincorporated. Again, it's the unincorporated area advisory commission for bike ped trails. So because this is unincorporated area, those are the three districts that encompass the unincorporated areas of Alameda County. District 2 and District 5 do not have any unincorporated areas in their districts. So that's why they would not have representation in an advisory commission that deals with the unincorporated area. So District 4, for instance, is getting four because they encompass Castro Valley, Cherryland, Ashland, and Fairview. District 3 is getting two members, and they have San Lorenzo and Hayward Acres. District 1 is getting one member, and they have Sunol as the unincorporated area, as well as unincorporated Pleasanton and unincorporated Livermore. So hopefully that straightens up, maybe clarifies the makeup of District 4 getting four, District 3 getting two, and District 1 getting one member. So another thing I'll comment on is that the goal of this commission is for the members to really, you know, strive to have members that reside in these unincorporated areas, people that use the system, right? We are including as a qualification, as a possibility, somebody that works at a public agency that serves the unincorporated area that they would be representing. The reason for that too is the current committee, I believe, has 3 members that are from public agencies. That would not really be the goal of the new commission. The goal is really to have residents, but that is kind of giving an out, if you will, if there is an issue with getting members perhaps, but that is the goal, is to have residents and users of the system. So hopefully that clarifies it, but happy to clarify further if needed. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's just finish with, I'm just gonna ask each member if you wanna have just one piece of input that you wanna make sure that Valerie takes back with her. So let me just start with Megan. Is there any one thing that you wanna make sure she brings back?
I mean, I heard you say that they, like, agenda items would go from the commission to the MACs. And I guess, I don't know if that was correct, but I wrote that down at least. You said commission first, then recommendations would go to MACs for votes or for review. Sorry.
Okay, that would be on a certain issue that would come to an agenda item. For instance, it's a, I don't know, safe routes to school, for instance, just say that as an example. And they have to look at that. If they have to, you know, it would go to the commission first, but then it would go to the MAC after that. So their recommendations would be, so not to usurp any authority from the MAC, in other words.
Okay. Got it.
Okay.
I don't have anything else important or notable to take back other than, I don't know, maybe when you put out the, I'm thinking of things as I say no, when you put out the request for members, I think it would be maybe helpful to include maps of current bike paths, trails, and pedestrian, you know, areas that would be in the jurisdiction and considered by the committee, so that it's a little more clear exactly what the commission would be, you know, discussing. That I think that a visual might be helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, Taylor?
I still have concerns about the distribution. I think we've stressed that already. Really the sentiment is just wanting equal representation of cause to on it. So we don't end up with, you know, it's because we heard it a lot, right? For Castro Valley Trail, dedicated people, and then missing out on other opportunities. So maybe there's just verbiage around guidance with that to clarify, since we do have a chart here and I think the visual is different from maybe what others are hearing. So that's that. And then actually my second bit is actually that I am fully supportive of the idea of elevating it, or I am in full support of elevating it. And I appreciate the public comment that was said earlier about, let me see, I made a note, sorry. Achieving more leverage with public works, because I think there's a natural synergy, but maybe some more accountability and partnership that this might help facilitate.
Warren?
So the first thing is balance. I've stressed that before, so I'll just stress it again. Different kinds of balance, different varieties of balance, equity, and geographic, to name two to start with. And then I also support elevating from a committee to a commission. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Sorry, Ray.
Results, Valerie. When I think about the public works comment, elevation with regards to public works, the master plan was buried on the public works website. I didn't see any of the creek trails or the railway trail sort of highlighted there. And so even just giving visibility would be a great start. But at the end of the day, the results, like, let's actually see more trails getting built. Thank you.
Okay, I want to thank you, for coming. And I think the commission is a good idea. And I'm just back to, I think we have to be more cognizant of the socioeconomic statistics within each area and not just the number of individuals that populate an area. And the other thing is we trust that Supervisor Miley and Supervisor Tam and the other supervisors will make appropriate decisions. But when something's written so that one or two people who want to do whatever in the heck they want to do, regardless of what seems fair or right, is when it's permitted within the structure and you get a wrong person in that position, then things could very easily go awry. So I think that's why we just have to be careful and not just say, oh, well, Supervisor Miley would never appoint four people. Well, maybe he won't, but maybe 3 years from now, that person is going to, do something totally that we're not expecting, shall we say. All right. Thank you very much for your presentations. And I think we've all stated that we appreciate the idea of the commission. All right. I think we are finished with all of our standard agenda items. And if we continue on, I believe the next thing is the chair's report, which I guess I used up at the beginning. So I will go on to, are there any other council announcements or comments or reports? Any council members have a last minute comment to report? Yes, Ray?
I think we have Tonya to thank for inviting the Sheriff's Department. So thank you, Tonya, and hopefully it's the first of ongoing continuous.
You're very welcome.
And sorry, one more thing. I support Council Member Taylor when it comes to language empowerment for our diverse community and making sure that translation is available.
Thank you. So anybody? I didn't have to say it again.
Any other council members have a report or anything? All right, staff, any staff announcements or comments or reports?
Nothing from me, thank you.
Okay, nothing from Tonya, Ashley, Celine? No?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Celine Huang, the district director. We do have upcoming Coffee with Supervisor Lena Tam on August 27th at our new San Leandro district office at 103 Callan Avenue. From 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. So August 27, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. And we also have a save the date for Alameda County Emergency Preparedness event on October 18 at the San Leandro Public Main Library. And that's all the announcement I have. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I don't see any other business. Thank you all for coming. I appreciate the members who actually come and stay to the very bitter end here. If there's no objections, we will adjourn the meeting. Any objections? All right. Meeting is adjourned at 8:50. Thank you. Great job.